And welcome in. And welcome in to the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Fraser here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe Rex Road, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Well rested. Got a nice night of sleep. How about you, buddy?
Struggling this morning, but we're going to get through it today here on the program. Nick Fraser, how are you doing this morning?
You know, we're going. I always say it every week when I'm here filling in for whoever, we're going. And today we're just going.
That's a good way to put it.
That's about right.
We're just going on the program here today. We got a lot to get to on the program. By the way, if you normally are tuning in via stream, via YouTube, or via Twitter, we're having some technical difficulties with that right now. With some power outage things that are going on, so we're working to fix that as we speak. So hang with us. We'll hopefully have our stream back up at some point in the program here today. So looking forward to that. We got Casey Alexander joining the show at 7:30, the NBA draft tonight. We'll get into Ben Shepherd, among other things, with Casey Alexander coming up at 7:30. So looking forward to that. And Charles Robinson, we think, from 8 to 8:30. Although it looked like he was not having a great time last night either.
Yeah. I noticed, so he's trying to get on a plane. Apparently, he was on a plane for 3.5 hours while it's thunderstormed.
And he never moved.
And then they finally let him off, and then they wouldn't let him out of the jet bridge.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's a very good time.
But, yeah, he'll suck it up. He'll be fine.
That's how I get put on, like, a no-fly list. Let me leave!
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah. I would have to think that some people lost it a little bit. So we're not on the stream. So in other words, I can actually relax and be myself and not have to be all pretty like I am during the normal.
Yeah, you just kind of, you know, let your hair down, all that other stuff.
Good. God. Every day it's so difficult to try to, like, you know,
you want to put that extra
be
makeup
on camera. I might wash this makeup off. Good call, man.
Well, the pre-show meeting lasted a long time today, too. I mean, Izzo was, he was rambling today. It's draft day, so he's fired up.
That's true, yeah. He doesn't have anybody drafted, does he? No. Casey Alexander's getting somebody drafted, though.
Yes, he is. We're looking forward to that coming up at 7:30. It is NBA draft day. Not a lot of suspense on who's going to go number one overall tonight, kind of like the NHL draft as well. And it, it is funny to me. 2023, we're 20 years removed from the 03 NBA draft and the 03 NHL draft. Both of which were one of the greatest drafts in the history of that sport.
All-timers.
Now you've got two generational talents coming in, the NBA and Victor Wembanyama, and the NHL and Connor Bedard 20 years later. It's going to be fun.
That is interesting. That's very interesting. So, let's see. At the time, that's the thing, though. The Crosby draft was 04? Was he 04?
He was, I believe,
or
05.
He was 05.
Yeah.
He was 05. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Marc-Andre Fleury went number one overall in Nashville. A right. Goalie, number one overall.
How about
20
that?
20 years ago.
How times have changed. I mean, I heard Caroline Willie DeMays talking. I think DeMays. So Willie does the quarterback comparison for goalies. DeMays did the running back comparison for goalies. Holy cow.
We're all over the map.
Maybe goalies are like receivers. Can we split the difference?
I like it. Joe, there was a trade late last night, that was completed in the NBA, and it involves the Memphis Grizzlies. The Boston Celtics, Washington Wizards, and Memphis Grizzlies agreed to a three-team trade last night that will send Kristaps Porzingis to the Celtics, Marcus Smart to the Grizzlies, and Tyus Jones to the Washington Wizards. So, first off, a couple of interesting things there. Marcus Smart going to the Grizzlies. We know John Morant going to be suspended for the first 25 games. Marcus Smart, a very good player in Boston, very good defender, very good shooter. And he is now with the Memphis Grizzlies. I do find it interesting that Tyus Jones, who has been very good for the Grizzlies, is now heading to the Wizards, and John Morant is suspended for 25 games. So somebody's going to have to play guard at some point.
Well, Marcus Smart will.
Well, point, is he going to play the point?
Yeah, I mean, he can. But it's he can. I think that's probably what the plan is, right?
I mean, I guess.
But I don't like this trade from Memphis, man. I love Marcus Smart's competitiveness, and he's an elite defender. But you gave up two firsts. You lose Tyus Jones, who, I mean, I think a lot of the Grizzlies' ability to be successful without John Morant has been because Tyus Jones is a starting-level point guard who is a better shot maker than John Morant, and Marcus Smart is not.
Yeah.
I mean, I, I like the toughness and the – I think there's some intangibles he brings that will definitely be good, but I just don't know if it was worth the cost here, man. And that's a lot to lose.
It is a lot to lose, and we knew Memphis was going to do something this offseason. I mean, they made it clear basically from the day their season ended that they were not going to bring back Dylan Brooks. We kind of knew that at that point. And now you got the Ja Morant suspension that you got to deal with for the first part of the season there for 25 games. So we knew that they were going to mix things up a little bit here. The Marcus Smart thing is interesting. This is the one thing about the NBA offseason that I think is better than any offseason in sports in terms of like the actual moves. There are big moves made seemingly every offseason. Here we are the day of the draft, day before the draft really, and the big moves are already kind of filing around in the NBA. Now there's rumors about Damian Lillard. Is he going to get moved? All this other stuff. It's going to be good.
Or the Blazers may bring in?
Scoot Henderson?
Well, was that Clay thing BS? That's one problem.
I've not seen Clay.
Okay, well, it must be then.
Well, I may have just missed it.
There was some, but I don't know. I guess I can find it. People talking about the Warriors trading Clay to the Blazers for three.
Why would the Blazers do that?
I have no idea.
I mean,
I don't think it's real. It can't be real, right?
I mean, I love Klay Thompson, but yeah. He's not quite the.
No, he's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
At this point, you do not get the third pick for him.
No, you do not.
So, but it is the Blazers, so, I mean, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose it's possible.
Could
By the way, it freaks me out that Mike Dunleavy Jr. is the Warriors GM. Like, to me, I'm like, oh, yeah, that freshman, annoying freshman at Duke.
Yeah.
And now he's a GM of the Warriors. Just wanted to let you know that.
Does that mean the saga is officially over? Or the saga? The dynasty is officially over?
I mean, you know, it probably is. But I'm interested this year to see if they can put one more run together. Like, the role player choices have to be great. They need another big. I mean, you know, they were... I'm not totally giving up on it. But I think right now the Nuggets... look like they could be in the early stages of something pretty special. And the West remains very tough.
Well, they do. And, you know, Victor Wembanyama going to go number one overall tonight to the San Antonio Spurs, would be my guess, considering that people are calling him the greatest prospect in the history of pro sports. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that San Antonio is going to make that pick tonight at number one overall. And then I'm really interested to see what he's like and how he lives up to the hype in year one. People are calling him certainly the best NBA prospect since LeBron James, and we know what the hype train was like around him. And that was, for the most part, pre-social media, LeBron James hype train heading into the NBA 20 years ago.
I mean, so, that was. I mean, I don't think there was any social media.
I don't even
then,
think
right?
MySpace was there yet. Yeah, so in pre-social 03? Media.
Like in 03 was like the year that what's-his-name, you know, started his little Facebook at Harvard and was like spying on girls at Harvard in the dorm or whatever the hell he was doing. So, yeah, like it was just like message boards on the internet.
You talking about Zuckerberg?
Yeah. Little goofball.
Yeah, man. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be – well, first off, like if you're Greg Popovich, for the last few years I've been wondering, like, so, I mean, Pop's getting – he's getting up there a little bit. He's won 5 championships with San Antonio, and they haven't been very good lately. So is the end coming? And now you get this kid falling into your lap. Maybe it's not coming. He might be around there for a little while longer.
Yeah, I would have really thought seriously about getting out. Now I'd think seriously about hanging around a few years. Yeah.
See what you can do with that team down there. So we'll see what happens on that front. Got the NBA draft coming up later tonight, the NHL draft next week here in Nashville. So it is draft season here in the NBA and NHL. And, you know, the NBA part of this is going to be interesting. It, beyond just Wembanyama, I mean, you've got Scoot Henderson, Brandon Miller from Alabama, who's a local product here in Nashville, you know, expected to go number two overall tonight, but we'll see how that all shakes out as well. But a lot of people saying this could be a really good NBA draft tonight, beyond just the Victor Wembanyama part of it.
If you're a Charlotte Hornets fan,
sucks.
Like, first of all, you're glad that Jordan's getting the hell out because he's awful at evaluating players. But also, like, whoever they pick now is going to suck because Jordan's still involved.
I know.
Go away.
Just any chance you get to take a shot at Michael Jordan, Tom Brady.
Am I wrong that Isaiah Thomas is my favorite athlete of all time. Terrible personnel guy, too.
Yes.
Okay? So, like, I mean, honestly, I feel like it's kind of a consistent thing with, like, great players and stuff. And they try to coach or GM or whatever. Yeah. Like, it doesn't work out too often.
I just miss the days when they were the Charlotte Bobcats. Just really drive this irrelevance home, the Bobcats instead of the Hornets.
Yeah. How many years was that?
Not very long. I think it was 7, 8.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. They're better as the Hornets.
They are.
But, yeah, like, I don't know. Brandon Miller, I like him a lot. But they're sold on him.
Apparently so.
I don't know.
He was really good at Alabama.
I like him. I mean, he's a very good prospect. But he's not, to me, a can't miss at all.
I don't think so either. And if you're going number 2 overall, you'd hope that that's what you are at that run. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens tonight in the NBA draft. You can check out that coverage right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will get into the Titans and take a deep dive at the offensive coordinator position. What are some numbers that we've come across from last year that do not shine a great light on Todd Downing? And just how much better could this team be with Tim Kelly as offensive coordinator? We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5, The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've discussed a lot about the Titans offense so far this offseason, and we'll see, you know, what DeAndre Hopkins' watch looks like. I admire our friend Jared Stillman for the deep dives that he is continuing to take into the DeAndre Hopkins situation. I think I've kind of reached my resting point on it, but Jared has not. He's still going. Good for him.
I mean, it's like it's almost like silly putty, right? When you give him like a little tiny drop of silly putty, and he'll like stretch it around his whole head.
He will,
and just, you know, keep it there for days. It's pretty amazing.
It's pretty unbelievable. I guess congratulations to Jared in his victory against you yesterday, and Jared versus Joe.
That's right. Good job. Good job, Jared.
Reading columns at The Athletic.
Yeah. Poorly.
All those things. Been good stuff. We'll get into that tomorrow with Jared Stillman when he joins our show. But one thing we've also talked about is how much different is this offense going to look? What's Tim Kelly going to bring to the table in terms of the play calling, the feel for the game that we talk about a lot with offensive coordinators, the new system, all those things. And Joe, you came across a tweet thread from Warren Sharp yesterday that does not paint Todd Downing in a great light when you go through this thread from Warren Sharp, who, as you've pointed out, maybe a little bit more trustworthy than your friends at Pro Football Focus?
Well, I think he is. I don't know. What do you think of Warren Sharp?
I like him.
I feel like he's, you know, he does good stuff.
Does a good job.
I mean, all this stuff, there's subjectivity involved in all this stuff. So, like, you know, anyone like this has numbers, has stats that they use to compare everyone, but there's still stats that are at times rooted in, okay, that to me is a stacked box. I mean, I know sometimes, like, dude, it shouldn't be that hard to count to 8 or whatever, right? But, I mean, there's still some subjectivity. Again, my biggest beef with PFF is the instant grade, especially for, like, offensive linemen after a game. It's just ridiculous. But, yeah, I couldn't ignore this from Warren Sharp yesterday. I'll just read some of what he said. He said, quote, "I spent a lot of time objectively researching every team, looking for the good and bad, being as open as mine as possible. One thing I'll never be talked off is my belief that Todd Downing was a double agent trying to make life difficult for the Titans offense." So here's some of the numbers that he had. And he has, I love these, you know, these little graphs. Now, this is an EPA. EPA per play on rushes, EPA per play on passes. That's expected points added, right? So he has that sweet little graph. Titans were, you know, the worst in terms of EPA per play on rushes, and they were best. This is first down. They were third worst at rushing. They were third best passing, okay? So, like, it was screaming. These numbers scream, like, pass, you know, first down. Tennessee had the number 2 highest run rate on first downs in the NFL last season. against Tennessee. Defense has stacked the box at the number four highest rate. I'd like to know 1, 2, and 3 on that, but okay. And then he says, unsurprisingly, the runs ranked number four worst in efficiency, but even the fact that they were, again, number three in pass efficiency on first down, they continued to run at that rate, at the number two highest run rate. And again, I'd like to know who number one was. But they repeated it over and over again. So essentially, like, and he has some other stuff too that, so basically, here's another thing. Okay, so stacked box, 95% stacked box percentage if there were less than three wide receivers on the field. So they were in like, 12 or whatever, 95% stacked box. 90% the box was stacked in the first quarter, and 84% it was stacked if Derrick Henry's just on the field. Those numbers aren't that surprising, right? I mean, it sounds like by what we saw, but the rate, the fact that the passing efficiency was so high, I think maybe that's the thing about this that is interesting to me. It's like you do wonder, like, why maybe they, didn't go into that a little bit more. And I don't think every single game, every single series was. We all can think back and remember it was all so predictable, but it was too often. And then these numbers are pretty damning, I'd say.
Well, I mean, it goes back to kind of the analytical discussion we've had too. And like I said, you're not going to sit there on the sideline or in the box, wherever you're calling plays from, and just have your analytical chart in front of you at all times and be like, well, the percentages say that we should throw the ball here. So, I mean, you factor that information in, but it is interesting that the Titans were as effective as they were, according to those numbers, throwing the football on first down last year, and how it just kind of felt like they were just, let's turn around and run face first into a brick wall over and over again and see if that'll work on first and 10.
And, the thing is, though, this is more in sharp getting the first downs. I'd like to see the second and 10.
Oh, I would too.
I feel like that was like almost, they're like, we need to get 3 yards. Somehow to make it 3rd and 7 instead of 3rd and 10. And then they got 1 instead. I thought that was like
a lot of practice at 3rd and 9 last year.
Yeah. And, one thing that Todd Downing said, he said, we want, 3rd and manageable, right? Which I get that, but like also first downs. Non third downs are great. Drives where you don't have third downs.
Avoiding third down at all costs.
Avoiding third down is a good thing too. But it's look, I mean, I don't think any of this is like revolutionary. Like it's different from what we saw. I mean, look, I've probably been a bigger Downing defender than a lot of people, and just in terms of not a defender, like wow, he was really good. Just in terms of, he had limitations. He certainly could have been better, less predictable. Again, I thought he had some good days on the job. The game at Green Bay
is a good three and a half hour stretch, right? For Todd Downing.
Yeah, the entire day wasn't good, but that part where he actually was at his job in the booth, that was good. They mixed it up and kept that defense off balance. So that did happen at times. It wasn't all bad, but overall, this kind of tells you why he's not here anymore.
It does, and it begs the question, how much better can Tim Kelly be? And, it's different personnel. There's a different offensive line group that he's dealing with this year. Treylon Burks in year two, all those things. So, we always talk about how much of it is coaching, how much of it is players. And I do think, to your point, there are some Titans fans that, as it went on last year with Todd Downing, was like every single thing that is wrong with this offense is Todd Downing's fault, and all they need to do is go get somebody else, and the Titans offense will be better. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, Dennis Daly is your starting left tackle last year at some point. I don't really care who your offensive coordinator is. That's going to end up being a problem for you. But again, I do think it's very possible that they've significantly upgraded over Todd Downing. So that's a big storyline to me heading into this year, is what exactly, how quantifiable is that upgrade? Like, what's that going to mean? What's that going to look like for this Titans offense? Beyond the personnel questions that we still have about the wide receiver room and the offensive line, all those things, how much better is Tim Kelly as OC? And the other part of that, Joe, is if it is, like if they come out this year, even with the personnel, let's say they don't land DeAndre Hopkins, and they've got the group that they have right now heading into the year, and maybe they're not a top 10 offense, anything like, you know, an elite offense or anything like that, but they move the football, they can run it really well with Derrick Henry, they passed it okay, and they're like league average, 15, 16, somewhere in that neighborhood. Like, at what point do you look back and say, man, was Todd Downing just an absolute disaster of a hiring? And why was that the case? Like, what all went into that if you're Mike Vrabel making that decision?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, obviously he got the opportunity with the Raiders one season. Lots of things went wrong. So, to me, it was like that did not, like, exclude him from getting another opportunity. But Vrabel gave him one. Some people said, don't do it. You know, it didn't work out. A lot of things didn't work out. I mean, if you're Todd Downing or in Todd Downing's family, you can look at everything and say, give me the 2020 Titans and I will look like make a Van Gogh out of it. You know, instead, you know, I'm finger painting over here in a coloring book. But you know what? Yeah. But you know what? He obviously impresses people, right? He's got a job with the Jets. Why is that? And you know, and there's a lot of like, you know, like Saleh, all these guys, LaFleur, like they all kind of like talk. So I mean, he's in that newfangled West Coast family and still getting opportunities. So he must not be completely incompetent. I don't know.
It's really strange though. Like those, I had never seen it laid out quite like Warren Sharp did yesterday, just in terms of the, we've always kind of talked about predictability, and at times it felt like you're just banging your head into a wall watching the Titans offense, but laying it out the way that Warren Sharp did on first down was pretty interesting yesterday. Just the commitment to running the football. I get it, Derrick Henry's your best player, all that stuff,
right?
But just the unyielding commitment to running the football on first down, when it's laid out that way, it's a problem.
Yeah, and the thing is, look, I mean, some of this was like the Titans feeling like, you know what, this is going to pay off eventually,
right?
And that's kind of been the case. I mean, even in years when they had much better numbers across the board, there were plenty of first down runs or first quarter runs that were smothered, right? But before last season, it did pay off late in the games. Last season, it went the other way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what made the second half last year so weird, is just both Derrick Henry, but also just the offense as a whole, were total no-shows in the second half for the most part.
Yeah, after like first halves in which they were maybe somewhat approaching like average in the and then second halves of like sub, like you get relegated to the USFL type offense.
Green Bay, they scored, what did they score, 10 in second half? 13,
ooh,
somewhere in
that
neighborhood.
Watch out, something like that.
Just lighten it up.
Yeah.
Up there. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans offense. How much better do you think they'll be with Tim Kelly at the helm as offensive coordinator? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they're referred to so often. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Fraser here with you on this Thursday morning. We're taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. And looking at the offensive coordinator position, how much better do we think Tim Kelly will be as offensive coordinator for the Titans? And if it's significantly better, what sort of a difference does that make for this group? So, Joe, we've always said this, and Mike Vrabel echoes this sentiment. We've talked about it in other sports. It's always more about players than it is about coaches. I think we would agree with that.
It's about players, not plays.
Players, not plays. That is the Vrabel quote for sure. But I do wonder, with the roster that we know that the Titans have right now, with the holes and the question marks, all that stuff, how much of a difference do you think just an upgraded offensive coordinator could make? And let's say it's a significant upgrade, that Tim Kelly's pretty good. Like, he's a pretty good OC. Maybe he's not Arthur Smith, but he's a pretty good OC. How much of a difference do you think that alone can make for this Titans offense?
Like you said, I think you used the word unquantifiable, which is a huge word to use in the 6 o'clock
it
hour.
Really
especially
is.
For someone
especially
on an hour and a half
hour
sleep.
And a half sleep. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Not even sure I know where I am right now.
But so it is hard to quantify. But I've got to think. That's the thing. It's like you've got – you can't say this about receiver, although you could say like Treylon Burks. If Treylon Burks takes a big step, then – I think you still take a step forward overall at that position. You know, everything else being equal, you still take a step forward. And even if, like, Kyle Phillips available versus unavailable last year for the most part, offensive line could be a step forward. I think you have to keep those expectations realistic. Obviously, you hope that you just really get the same thing from Tannehill and Henry. I know some people say, well, look at Tannehill's numbers. That's fine. But the same level of play, in my opinion, it would be good. With the other things better, tight end, you can see where a lot of things can advance forward. So then if you add in pretty significant upgrade at OC, then it should make a difference. I mean, you're talking about a team that scored, 17 a game last year? I mean, can you – a team that scored almost 30.7 points a game two seasons earlier, down to 17 last year. I'll get the exact number. I believe it was 17 a game. Can you get to 22? You know?
I'd sign up for that right now.
Yeah, what would that mean? You know, if you got in, you know, back into the 20s. I mean, you know, that, again, this team was a Josh Dobbs game that it looked might be one away from winning the division, though it was also a team that lost 7 straight games last year to end the season. But with that kind of an offense, you know, what if you had 5-6 points a game?
Well, I mean, it could be huge. I mean, think about what a difference that makes for last year's team. And just the, you know, first off, I know it's all about winning games, but the Titans were just at times brutal to watch last year. I'd like a little bit more excitement. We've talked about that before. Like, if you're going to lose, at least be fun to watch while you lose. And the Titans were losing last year, and were not very fun to watch. So I would love for them to be a more explosive offensively, more unpredictable. And it's funny we say that because, you know, Todd Downing, there were some times last year where the Titans were very unpredictable with what they did with Malik Willis coming on the jet sweep and the lateral across the field from Treylon Burks over to Robert Woods.
He came up with some stuff.
No question about it last year, but – I think the timing of it is kind of the interesting part. And we've talked about this with OCs. It feels like some guys have a really good feel for the game, and some people maybe don't.
It's hard to, quantify.
It is.
But no, maybe quantify is not the word. It's hard to explain it.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to – it's just you know it when you see it. It's like if you see, you know, you see a good movie or something. I mean, I can't tell you what the exact, like, you know, shots were or whatever, or all the techniques the director used, but you just know it's good. Yeah. Like you watch The Godfather, take the music away from The Godfather, take the score out of The Godfather and watch a scene. You're like, oh God, this is not at all the same movie.
Exactly. So, I mean, it felt like, you know, Arthur Smith wasn't perfect, right? I mean, the last game that we saw Arthur Smith coach here as offensive coordinator with the Titans against the Ravens in the playoff game, I don't think he did a very good job. Like, I didn't think it was a very good game plan
for
the Titans. It was bad offense that day. So it's not like Arthur Smith was, you know, perfect as OC of the Titans. But it did feel like more times than not, I guess the best way to describe it, he was one step ahead of the defense. There were plays that set up other plays. It felt like there was a well-executed plan out there. Now, the ability level on that offense was also much different than it was the last couple of years.
Massively.
Here with the Titans, particularly up front on the offensive line. So,
And A.J. Brown.
And A.J. Brown.
Makes a little difference.
Makes a little bit of difference. Now, Todd Downing did have A.J. Brown 1 year.
He did.
But.
And those were the best days he had as an OC were those days when A.J. Brown went off.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, again, that's a situation that comes down to players and not plays. But, you know, that's a big part of what this offense is going to be this year is how good is Tim Kelly. And then, I mean, the secondary part of that to it is how much different is the offense? What exactly is that going to look like when it comes to game day on Sundays with the approach? I mean, are they up-tempo a little bit more? Do they want to throw it more on first down? How much does their philosophy change on some of those things? It is going to be interesting to see what that looks like on game day, given the roster that they currently have.
You know, you bring up he had AJ Brown that year. I mean, after his first season, and I think Jared's a good litmus test on this because he easily gets into panicky fan fire everybody mode. He thought Donnie was fine his first year. I think for the most part, we thought he was okay. It wasn't terrible in 21. First of all, they were the number one seed. Some of those wins involved good offense. We didn't, right?
Yes.
He didn't look terrible until last year when he had terrible material.
Right. Now, he also, I shouldn't say the entire part of the fan base, but a lot of the anger in the aftermath of the Cincinnati game was directed at one person. And it was the quarterback and Ryan Tannehill. But we talked about it after that, too. Like, you looked at the way that game took place. There are a lot of routes where you're just like,
yeah,
what are they doing out there? Like, Todd Downing, I think, deserved his share of blame in that one, too.
Yeah. No. I mean, the first play just looks flawed.
Yeah.
If it was run correctly. And the second pick was absolutely tugged. They knew exactly what the Titans were doing on that play. So, you know, the last one was on Tannehill. You can't force that ball in there. But, yeah, no, he deserved a chunk of it. By the way, the Titans, I want to make sure, you know, to give them proper credit. They were at 17.5.
Oh, yes.
Which was better than the Jets, Colts, Texans, and Broncos. Let me ask you this. I mean, we can all guess who the team that led the league in scoring, the Chiefs.
Yep.
Can you guess what they averaged per game?
I'll go 28.2.
Okay. 29.2. That's pretty close.
That
kind of surprises me because you know, like I just said, the Titans the Titans were 30.7 and didn't lead the league, but that is also part of the story of last year is that, you know, the defense has actually started. I mean, back in this can't be right. Oh my God. Sorry. I'm having total computer issues. At least I do have internet on my hotspot.
That's good.
I was trying to see the highest scoring teams, and it said Detroit Lions 32.4. And I'm like, well, that is. And then I realized, oh, I accidentally switched to defense allowed.
Points allowed.
Worst defense. Yeah. But back in 2020 when the Titans scored 30.7, that was only fourth in the league. Your Green Bay Packers were at 31.8. So a couple points a game down. Mm-hmm. I mean, five teams in the 30s back in 20 and no teams in the 30s in 22.
Well, maybe
what does it mean?
Maybe what you really just saw is maybe a little bit of foreshadowing of what the Detroit Lions are going to be this year. 32 points per game.
Giving up on D.
No, yes. I'm talking about the way you had it the first time, scoring 32 points per game.
Super Bowl contender, Detroit Lions.
By the way, did you see their alternate helmets that they came out with yesterday?
Yeah, they've had that before.
Yeah.
That's based on the Ford Mustang logo.
Yeah.
From back in the day, back when the Fords bought the franchise and sent it into an internal tailspin. But I like the Mustang.
Sometimes it's okay just to leave the helmet alone.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's fine. Like, everybody has to have the stupid alternative uniforms, and then you try to get people to buy them.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the helmet's kind of cool. The gray uniform that they put with it are dumb.
I mean, every now and then, like, the Packers will come out, wear some alternate jersey, and I'm like, hey, can you please stop? Just wear the jersey. There's nothing wrong with it. Just put it on.
And it used to be like, you know, like these college football teams would do it. And this has started about 12 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And it was just like, but it's like, oh, yeah, recruits love it. Okay, fine. Well, there's no excuse in the NFL. Rookies love it? No. Yeah, exactly. Just try to sell more merch.
Treylon Burks really wants to wear the Houston Oilers throwbacks. We got to do it this year, guys.
But I will say the trolling that can go on.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. The trolling, if they get DeAndre Hopkins and he's wearing an Oilers jersey and Houston's catching a touchdown pass out in the Texans.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good trolling.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions on that on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That is next. But first, Joe Rexroad has a word from our friends at PA. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Frazier here with you on this Thursday morning. It is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, kick us off with your best and worst things in the world of sports.
All right, well, my best, you know, the NBA draft is tonight, but you know what? And I'm going to be keeping track of it. But I'm way more excited about LSU Wake Forest. Winner gets into the finals. Paul Skeens against Rhett Lowder. You're talking about first round picks. Fantastic matchup. This is a dream matchup. Like, LSU and Wake Forest have played twice, but now their aces on shorter rest than normal are going to be going head to head. And it's all part of my best, which is the College World Series, which is again, every year it delivers. So many great games in this version. And, you know, on the Tennessee side of things, a thrilling comeback win, you know, a couple disappointing performances against LSU, a better team. But so many great games on the other side of the bracket, too. It's always fantastic. And you got Florida over there. You might have your SEC, all SEC, you know, matchup, which has happened before, of course. I mean, just a couple years ago, you had Vanderbilt, Mississippi State. Or Wake Forest, it's still possible that the number one seed could win this thing for the first time since 1999. The only time since they've gone to this format, the number one seed has won it all.
It's wild.
Which is very wild. I mean, hey, Wake's done better than a lot of the one seeds, and Tennessee can attest to that. But it's just a fantastic thing. It delivers, and more people should watch it. I know I saw that the Tennessee-LSU Saturday ratings were fantastic, like the best since like 09. So, I mean, a lot of eyeballs, a lot of jello shots. Good times.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, wait, I just forgot my worst. You're the one who's supposed to be tired here in the 6 a.m. hour. My worst in sports is the New York Post report, which I assume is, you know, is valid, that Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max is getting canceled.
I saw that.
I really don't like that. I like that show. And also, there's now, in the report, it's like now, like, Keyshawn may go, like, take Sterling or Shannon Sharpe's place with Skip. No.
Don't do that to yourself, Keyshawn.
Yeah, I don't like that. I really like the show. In particular, you know, I like Jason Williams on the show. But I mean, I think it's a good show, and I know that there's a lot of stuff about to come apparently at ESPN, which really sucks. And so that's part of that too. But yeah, big thumbs down on that. I thought it was a really good show.
Well, and it looks like it doesn't look like McAfee's coming in there at some point. So how they make all that work is going to be really interesting. But,
well, yeah, and so he's taking. I mean, I think he's going to take the slot where Max Kellerman has poor Max Kellerman just gets trampled on, man.
Sorry, man.
And I feel bad about ripping his Saquon Barkley take that end up being right.
Friend of the shows, I guess.
Yeah.
Never really had any of them on, but we have gone back and forth with those guys. So it does suck. Absolutely. No question about that. Nick Frazier, do you have a best and worst things in sports for this week?
I do. And the biggest worst, I'm going to go with the worst. I'm going to go negative and then positive.
Okay.
Nashville SC lost last night 1-0. Their unbeaten streak that was at 10 is now cut off. I think it's the longest in franchise history. So that's a little bit of a negative and a positive there at the same time. But the positive, I'm going to keep it close to home. I got my mom into the UFC TV show, Ultimate Fighter. So that's a big plus. My mom's not a big Ultimate Fighter person. So that's a best of the sports week for me.
There you go.
Nice.
Joe's a big UFC guy, too.
I don't know, man. It kind of makes me queasy.
He'll play some highlights sometimes up on TV, and Joe's looking up. He's like, oh, boy.
It's like, God, did you have to punch the throat again?
He got hit right in the face. Oh, my goodness.
So you're not a fan of the snapping of the ankle, I guess.
Yeah. I love boxing. I just these other fighting things are too brutal for me. I'm old and, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that, Joe. Nothing wrong.
I'm kind of soft.
All right, my best thing in sports, the NBA offseason. I really enjoy it, and there's always some storyline that kind of occupies the attention. I think this one's going to be, number one, the draft tonight with Victor Wembanyama and how good's he going to be and all that stuff. But Damian Lillard, his future in Portland, is he going to remain there? Is he going to be traded elsewhere? Is it going to be to Brooklyn? Is it going to be to Miami? I mean, there's a lot of noise out there on the Damian Lillard front. Draymond opting out of his player option. Does he end up back with Golden State? Does he end up somewhere else? How much money does he get paid? I mean, the NBA, I think, does a great job in the offseason with the way things are structured of keeping the conversation going. And look, a lot of people I know love the NBA offseason more than they do the NBA regular season until they get to the playoffs. It's a pretty good offseason. So my best thing in sports is the NBA offseason. It's off to a good start.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could – I might rank it playoffs, which is amazing. Offseason, regular season.
I think that's how I would rank
it. I mean, like, obviously you get excited for the beginning and, like, there's a great Christmas day. Like, there's points of the regular season that matter and that are good. But, yeah, man. It's pretty good offseason.
My worst thing in sports, and this is not necessarily directed at the person specifically, although if they're seeking this contract, I look around and think to myself, who's going to play this? Elliot Friedman was on yesterday with Chase and Michelle. And this is not a new thought that Elliot brought to the table yesterday, but you know, we've talked about Alex DeBrincat being out there and maybe some guys that could be available for the Predators and other teams to pursue via trade. And one name that Elliot brought up yesterday was Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's been first with Columbus, then with Winnipeg. He's made it clear that he doesn't want to re-sign in Winnipeg. He wants to be traded. I think it's pretty clear that his preferred destination is Montreal, but we'll see what happens there. Anyway, he's 24 years old. He needs a new contract, and he apparently is seeking 8 years, $9 million per year, which is just an absurd number, I think. I mean, I look at his production, and don't get me wrong, like, he's a good player. He's probably a really good second line winger, and there's nothing wrong with that. But he's never had more than 63 points in a season. He's never scored 30 goals in the season, and you want an 8-year deal worth $9 million per year?
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, man.
I mean, good luck to you. I said this yesterday because our buddy Nick Kieser tweeted that quote out from Elliot on the show yesterday with Chase and Michelle. And I said something to the effect of, yeah, I would not even remotely entertain this contract if I were the Predators or anywhere else. Now, there's other parts about him that I really don't like. Like, he's already forced his way out of Columbus and is basically forcing his way out of Winnipeg too. And he's 24.
Some red flags.
There's some red flags with this guy. So I don't – first off, I feel like I have a pretty good gauge on like what a Barry Trotz guy is. He's not it. So I don't think the Predators are going to be involved in this to begin with. But I saw that yesterday. And I was like, so a guy that's never had more than 63 points in a year wants 8 years and $9 million per. Good luck to you, buddy. See how that goes for you. Yeah. Maybe he gets it. Hextall, maybe Montreal does it.
Hextall would have given that to Granlund.
Probably would have. Hey, Mikhail, we'd really like to extend this deal. It's working out really well.
Your point, 2 points a game, is really looking good.
We know that you're getting paid $5 million now, but what about maybe a 3-year extension and add $7 million a year to it? What do you think about that?
I feel like the thing is, I'm not taking shots at Granlund. I like Mikhail Granlund, and he did a lot of good things here.
He did.
I'm just saying. What are you doing, Hextall?
Well, my God. I mean, it's a big reason of why he's no longer a general manager in the NHL.
He went out in a blaze of glory.
He did.
You're going to get yourself fired, do it with flair, baby.
I had this conversation with somebody last week, and we were going through just kind of the moves that were made and what could happen at the draft and all this stuff. And we were trying to think, like, what was more unbelievable? Was it the haul that they got for Tanner Jeannot, which was just incredible, the amount of draft capital they got in return for Tanner Jeannot? Or was it the fact that they were able to get rid of that Mikhail Granlund contract? I honestly don't know.
Both are – the fact that both happened in the same trading deadline.
Like the same week.
Again, it's like – I mean, Poyle did the ultimate, like, double bird mic drop on everybody, you know?
He did. I was thinking about it. I was like, I can't believe that they got Pittsburgh not only to take the contract, but gave up a second-round pick in order to do it. It's incredible. It really was.
Wow. What a time.
It was a time. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into a little college football. Believe it or not, it's right around the corner. We're not that far away from college football. What are expectations for this Tennessee team, and what can Josh Heupel specifically prove about his team and his program this year? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.